book and decide what you're going to do. Be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. Thanks for joining us and become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and well, hopefully for the next hour, they're going to be views of Dr. Mark Geyer and his son, David Geyer. We're having a little difficulty getting them, so we're going to have problems. So let me just tell you a little bit about the background. Dr. Geyer, as a physician, he lives back in Maryland, as I recall, and he actually has been concerned about the autism and the mental problems of children for many, many years, as have I. And of course, it was very, very obvious that there's a direct relationship between the mercury and the vaccines and the onset of autism and the autism-associated diseases. How do we know that for certain? Well, first of all, because Amish children and Mennonite children who do not take the vaccines don't actually come down with autism. And because Dr. Mark Geyer, under Freedom of Information Act, was able to get the Centers for Disease Control let him look at their computer base going into the background of autism. Now, basically what had happened is that Kaiser had given children, large numbers of children, vaccines that did not contain mercury thimerosal. And so they were able to compare the children who had the vaccines without the mercury with those who had. The CDC, under court order, had actually allowed them to look at the computer, but I didn't tell them how to use it. And they had a special codes there. There was no way. They were locked in a room with a computer and no way to access the information. And fortunately, a woman who worked at the Centers for Disease Control, who had a child who had suddenly autistic problems, came in and showed them how to get into the program. And what did they find? Why did the CDC try to cover up the truth? Well, basically what they found was that there was a 27-fold, that's 27 times, increase in the incidence of autism and autism-related diseases with the children who had the thimerosal and those who did not. So the CDC obviously knew what was going on, and they were trying to cover it up. Well, we're not having much problem. I'm not sure luck getting hold of Dr. Geyer. So our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you'd like to give us a call on this subject or any other subject, we'll just start out doing open lines, and hopefully we'll be able to get hold of Mark. I talked to him because I wanted you to hear his story. Well, actually, then Mark, Sydney, working with these children for many, many years, really was quite frustrated. He came up with an idea. There's a medication that's available that blocks the effect of mercury. And so he started giving this to children with autism, and they improved, and they improved dramatically. And then he began setting up clinics all across America where he was actually helping these autistic children. He had other doctors working with him locally and administering the medication, but he supervised this. He has treated about 800 children, and they've improved dramatically, many of them. And so he was having a great deal of success curing and treating these children who were autistic when nothing else would help. And, well, what was his reward? Why, the, I believe it's Maryland, anywhere, the state where he is, pulled his medical license so he couldn't practice medicine. On what basis? Well, because he was critical of vaccines, and everybody knows vaccines are helpful, but sometimes they're not helpful, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, Mark then took the case to federal court. The judge told the medical board to restore the license, and they said they absolutely refused. Give us a call, 1-888-24-WAR.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the price of the gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading is founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulation. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 6 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Longevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack,
which contains
one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios. Promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730. Ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dried Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dried Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dried Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dried Guy, the best you can buy.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We finally were able to get Mark and David on the line. We were having some technical difficulties, but Dr. Mark Geyer is a physician, and he has, of course, come up with this program of treating autistic children with this medication that blocks the effect of mercury. Would that be a fair assessment of it, Mark?
Well, it blocks one of the terrible things that mercury does. Mercury poisons many systems. But one of the things mercury does is it elevates androgens or testosterone. And that's a very, very big problem. And these kids have high androgens. And to your listeners out there who have children with autism, the description is if they're young, they'll have hair, they'll have body odor, they'll masturbate, they'll be interested in sex. They have a form of precocious puberty, which is resultant from high testosterone. And high testosterone also causes bad behavior, aggressive behavior, inability to sleep, inability to concentrate, and there's a very, very safe, long-tested drug, approved by the FDA. Everybody's used it, no one died from it, called Lupron. And Lupron will reverse that effect, and it also actually helps the mercury problem.
Well, then basically what you're doing is just blocking the testosterone, which is associated with the premature puberty in these autistic children. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes. And it's interesting that, of course, everybody who's been mercury poisoned, every way you read about mercury poisoning, and there have been many poisonings, especially the males, exhibit aggressive behavior. And we've now demonstrated through multiple peer-reviewed papers that have been published everywhere in textbook chapters that how mercury elevates testosterone and how testosterone and mercury interact and how people with high testosterone are sensitive to mercury. We've worked the entire thing out now, and it's a very big shame that because we tell the truth about mercury causing the autism epidemic, we are not very popular, let's say.
Well, I think that's for our listeners out there. Of course, the medication that Mark gives blocks the testosterone, and the patient will be much better within a few days in most instances. If they stop the medication, why, the symptoms come back again, just like they were before. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes. We have kids. There's a book written by the first child that we treated by the mother of the first child, Lisa Sykes, called Sacred Spark. It's available on Amazon.com, and we've been treating him for many years. And he's gone from when we started treating him, he was a kid that couldn't sign his name, had almost no words, was considered totally ineligible, and ready to go toward a psych to a kid now that's getting ready to go to junior college. And we have tried twice, taking him off Lupron to see if maybe he doesn't need it. And each time he's gone back, and now we put him on Lupron again, and he's back again being good.
And
it's
his
a typical thing that we see.
So he is actually then able to think and function on a fairly adequate level?
Yeah, it's very interesting to see in Wesley Sykes what happens when one lowers testosterone level, because he, with his high levels of testosterone, was completely disconnected from the world. People forget exactly what autism means. Autism means to be withdrawn, to be isolated, to be in one's own world. And that was Wesley Sykes exactly before the therapy was begun. He was in a different world. He was constantly in motion, completely detached. And what was so fascinating to see with him is that we basically peeled away those symptoms in autism, meaning that he was able to be more calm, less hyperactive, more interactive with others. All of a sudden, a tremendous personality emerged in Wesley. He's a child that has the ability to play tricks on other people. He has the ability to read and comprehend. Many of the parents say there was a lot inside of him that was locked up. The Lupron helped unlock that, and with the therapy, he's able to interact and be a member of the community. The moment the medicine is stopped, within a few weeks or a few months, all of the old behaviors come back, and all of a sudden, Wesley is completely detached. He comes in stomping, throwing his shoes. He was on the floor, kicking, flailing, to the point of almost injuring others, and medicine was given again, and slowly again that inside part started coming out.
Well, now, you have actually treated how many, about 800 children?
Yeah, many hundred children, yes, around the country.
Okay, well, now, how many of them are as dramatic? I mean, are half of them as dramatic as this young man, or are the majority of them? I mean, this sounds just like almost a miraculous recovery on this young man's part, but are many of the other young children have this dramatic recovery, or are there just some element of improvement?
As my father was saying, autism, if you look at it, and we've actually recently published on this, we've published specifically on the behavioral component, meaning kids that have destructive behaviors, injure themselves or others, basically unhappy, upset. We find that it's over 80, maybe almost 90% of the kids, if you look carefully, have these kind of problem behaviors. And as a result, medicine that's designed to treat that, meaning called Lupron or Luprolide acetate, which directly treats the biochemical problem, helps a very, very large percentage of these kids.
And, you know, this is a tragic week, but as you are probably aware, in Connecticut there was a shooting by an autistic child of 20-some people. Same thing happened at Virginia Tech. People like to deny that it's because they're autistic, Certainly not every autistic is going to shoot 24 people, but they are at high risk, and they're not bad children. They have a disease. They have a disorder. And if we deny it and pretend they're not violent, and we pretend they're not poisoned and that they're just fine, we're never going to make progress on this. We really care about these kids, but these kids are dangerous if they're not treated. We haven't had one of our children shoot anybody, but they break mother's arms, they break holes in the wall, they break windows, they throw things at us. Until they get treated, they're dangerous, and they're also strong, because testosterone makes you very strong. And every parent who heard the word autism associated with the shooting says, oh no, they don't do that, not my kid. Even Wesley's mother, but Reverend Sykes, said that. And we said, Reverend Sykes, we love him deeply. And you have to realize that if he's not treated, that's the kind of thing that can happen. The alternate treatment, the other treatment that's used, is Risperdal, which is a psych med, which incidentally lowers testosterone, does it very poorly, permanently damages the male reproduction system, which Lupron does not do, and causes all kinds of side effects, also works because it lowers testosterone rather poorly. In fact, everything that helps autistic, we found, all have one thing in common. They all lower testosterone, but they all are side effects. Lupron is a specific drug that tells the brain to stop making testosterone. Does nothing else. It's been studied for 25 years. It came out in the 80s. The standard treatment for precocious puberty, and we use it for precocious puberty in kids that have autism. And in addition to helping their precocious puberty, their autism goes away. And we weren't ducking through other questions. The vast majority of children are greatly improved. Some of our kids have extreme brain damage. You can't fix the brain damage. But you can turn off the unhappiness, the aggression, the autism part. And they're all, just about all, remarkably better. And some of them are still very smart. Some of them are very, very smart. Some of them have extremely high IQs. It doesn't matter if you have an IQ of 160. If you start hitting people, if you start breaking things, you're going to go to an institution, and they're going to put you on psych meds, and you're not going to have a 160 IQ. What you're going to do is be drooling and have suppressed dyskinesia and have movement problems and be half asleep. That's what's happening, and there are 2 million autistics, maybe more, and our CDC continues to insist on injecting them with mercury. And this very week, the American Academy of Pediatrics, for the first time, has come out and formally said that they're in favor of keeping mercury in vaccines. They think it's a good idea. They used to say they were getting rid of it as quickly as possible, and, you know, it wasn't very quick. And they said that because we are going to the United Nations in January, just a few weeks from now. And we have gone several times to a United Nations treaty on mercury, and we've gotten the United Nations to add to the treaty that they're going to remove mercury from the vaccines. We have over 100 nations supporting us. There are 5 nations that want to keep it in the vaccine, led by the United States. I thought we were the good guys, but we're obviously not the good guys in this issue, because we want to keep giving children mercury-containing vaccines. At the same time that we have a treaty that says mercury in all its forms is dangerous to human health, we want to inject children. And the WHO wants to do it worldwide because it would cost $1 million, according to their estimate, to switch for the whole world. One crummy $1 million, which the treaty could easily put up. And meanwhile, the treaty is asking power plants to get rid of mercury. It costs them millions of dollars per power plant, billions of dollars to do it around the world. And the WHO doesn't think, and they've actually said, the children of Africa aren't worth the difference. We think all children are worth the difference. And we continue to give American children mercury so that we can give it in Africa, and they've said that. So that's why our children are the guinea pigs, because we have to be able to keep giving it in Africa. How dare these people do this? These are the children of the world. This is our future. They can't go around poisoning these people, and they darn well know it, because we have their internal documents. We've just got we did freedom of information. We had to take them to court. There are a couple studies on their side that say that mercury don't cause, and they're primarily by Dr. Thorson. Dr. Thorson is number one on the most wanted list. He's been indicted. He'll get 400 years if they ever catch him. And the CDC and the WHO continue to publish with him while he's on the wanted list with U.S. money.
We're supposed to rely
on his study. He's on the phony because the email says it's phony.
No, he's on
this
the wanted
amazing.
List by who? Who indicted him?
He was the Department of Health and Human Services in response to a letter that our group, the Coalition for Mercury Free, sent to them outlining his criminal activity, indicted him for various fraudulent activities, for absconding with millions of dollars in temp money for apparently buying Harley Davidson motorcycle, a house, a car, as well as conducting fraudulent misrepresentation.
Well, you know, I read the article in the New York Times just yesterday talking about how the American Academy of Pediatrics said they had new scientific information saying that thimerosal wasn't dangerous. Well, I know it's dangerous. They know it's dangerous. The American Academy of Pediatrics is certainly lying to its members and lying to the public. And we'll be back in just a moment. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now. 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Well, Dr. Stan, I guess, is Dr. Mark Geyer, his son David Geyer, and basically they're talking about their work with vaccines. Now, basically, oh, you were being lied to here in the United States some years ago in the early 2000s, why they took the mercury out of childhood vaccines. But they then immediately mandated that children take the influenza vaccine that contained thimerosal and mercury. Now, basically, why would you take it out of the childhood vaccines and then mandate they would have to take a vaccine, the influenza vaccine, that contained mercury? Well, you see, it's not a childhood vaccine. So they've taken out of the childhood vaccines, but they've left it in the vaccines they give to children. And by the time a child is at 20 years old, if they take, as they're told to, the influenza vaccine, they'll have more mercury than they'd taken the regular childhood vaccines. They're intentionally damaging our children, and it is so hard for the average individual to believe this could be going on. But, of course, they want, of course, continue giving the childhood vaccines that contain the mercury to children in Africa, because I believe there is actually an organized effort, of course, to depopulate Africa. And we see this with AIDS. We see how AIDS is primarily a disease of blacks in Africa, not primarily a disease in America, but 25% of the population in many of the countries over there, 25% have HIV disease or AIDS, and they're all going to die. And you don't see that here in the United States, but you sure see it in Africa. And now they want to use this, and this is the latest controversy, they want to put the mercury in those vaccines. Mark, are they talking about actually putting the mercury back into our American childhood vaccines, or just leaving it there in the influenza vaccine they give to infants and to children and to the elderly?
And the worst, they give it to pregnant women. Pregnant women. That one really gets me. We asked for studies on pregnant women for the safety, and they say it's unethical to do studies on pregnant women, so they just recommend it for everybody.
Well, it's unethical, now, first, it's unethical to give it to pregnant women if they can't prove it's safe, but they twist words. They're so expert at twisting words and talking
but,
about
you know, I'm not sure. Remember, I'm the guy that's still pro-vaccine, but... And I'm not sure they're intentionally trying to get rid of the Africans, but I would point out, Africans or no Africans, they're giving it to our children and our pregnant women.
And ladies and gentlemen, one reason I come out strongly against the influenza vaccine is because it has mercury in it. Almost all does. I think 10% doesn't. You have to specifically request it. But to give it to a pregnant woman in America, and then we wonder why so many of our children have autism. It went from 1 in 10,000 to about 1 in every, what is it, about 1 in 64 boys now?
Autism. I think it's worse than that, actually. And worse than that, it causes ADD and ADHD.
The most recent numbers from the CDC said 1 in 88 children now has autism in the United States, and a number of the states like New Jersey and Utah are now reporting more than 2% of their children have autism, so that exceeds 1 in 50.
And because basically, of course, it's much more frequent in boys than girls. My understanding, about 6 boys for every girl. So we're probably talking about what, 1 in about 64 or 65 boys, something like that.
We think it would probably is if you, and they admit they don't do children who go are homeschooled. We fear it's probably more like 1 in 20, and worse, it's 1 in 6 to 1 in 3 children have attention deficit, which they themselves know is a mild form of autism. 1 in 3. They're destroying the male population in this country, not just in Africa, but in this country, in our own country. It's amazing that they would have the chutzpah, the nerve to do this.
Well, unfortunately, I believe that we're working with people who have a different worldview than you and I do, Mark. And I've been at this battle, as you know, for 50 years, but I've been studying population control for 20 years. And certainly, I have no question at all that some of the people, not all of them, but some of the people know exactly what they're doing. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Dr. Mark Geyer, for David. They're on the front lines of this battle. They're treating children with autism. They're helping children with autism. And as a result of that, of course, they pulled Mark Geyer's license. A federal judge told them that the medical board, they would have to give it back again. And the medical board has refused to give Mark back his license, even after a federal judge told them he had to do it. How could the medical board withhold your license after they've been ordered to restore it?
Well, I wish they'd actually ordered to restore it, but what they declared was that our treatment was a great discovery and the best treatment for autism.
All right.
And it was a law judge that the board appointed, and you know they don't follow the law. None of these people follow the law. at the UN, when it was obvious we had 100 votes and they had 5, WHO got up, we all get to make speeches at the UN, and their speech was, we don't care if you outlawed you, Mr. UN, because we're not going to follow it. And we've outlawed it in 7 U.S. states, and they don't follow it. They don't think they're under the law. They think they obey the law as long as it does what they want for public health.
Hold that thought, Mark. We'll be back in just a moment. And if you're out there listening audience, give us a call.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid that is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730. And ask about business opportunities.
Back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly David DeGeyer was just explaining what happened at the court. Now, basically, the Maryland Board of Medicine took away Mark's license, and of course charged his son David with I don't know what sort of charges against him, but actually Mark then and David went to an administrative judge court set up by the Medical Board of Maryland to try to prove their innocence, which they did. An administrative law judge said that both Mark and certainly that David were innocent, that they had an excellent treatment, that they were helping people. But the board totally ignored what their own administrative law judge had come up with. So what's the next step, Mark? Are you going to bring a personal lawsuit against the doctors on that board for what they have done?
Isn't that interesting? Because today we filed a $6 million lawsuit personally against them. But interestingly, up until recently, I couldn't bring the actual case about my license to the Maryland court. Because they have a rule in Maryland that until you exhaust all of their remedies internally, you can't go to the court. And they make sure that takes years. But actually, I have now filed a case in Maryland court. You can't go to federal court either. So we have a case in Maryland court. And today was filed a damages against the individuals on the board. Interestingly, the board is now being investigated by the state of Maryland, because not because of our case, but because it sunsets this year, and they assigned a committee who determined that the board never follows the rules. And not only that, but they're unlawful, and if you pass any new laws, the committee said, they won't follow them anyway, so don't even bother. But what's sad about all this is medicine is now controlled by public health. Virtually every state, maybe it's every state, now has public health licensing the doctor. It used to be a medical society, but now it's public health, which means if the doctors don't do what public health wants them to do, they're going to take away their licenses. We as doctors swore an oath, not to public health, but to our patients. Public health wants you to do what's good for the overall, what they think is good for the overall world. I don't care about the overall world. I want to do what's good for my patients. And if I do that and I don't listen to what they want me to do, or any doctor does, they're going to take away their licenses. They are now in charge of all of medicine. They very quietly now license in every state that I've ever seen now.
Well, I can sympathize with you because I fought the California Medical Association as a member of the House of Delegates for a period of almost 10 years, actually fully 10 years from 1986 to 1995. And eventually, of course, with all the pressure they put on me, eventually I was able to win the House of Delegates over to my position, got a standing ovation from the House of Delegates. It was all in the AIDS epidemic. Of course, we wanted to treat AIDS as a public health issue and certainly do what you do with all other diseases, try to stop its spread by using standard and effective public health measures, routine testing, reportability of HIV disease, certainly premarital, prenatal, postnatal testing to find out who had the disease and try to stop its spread, and organized medicine, despite the fact that doctors were all in favor of it, the representatives refused to do it. We've killed in America about 600,000 people. Another 1,100,000 are infected, and they're all going to die because organized medicine was intent upon not addressing the AIDS epidemic. Now, of course, the issue you're talking about is even more devastating when we think of the number of autistic children who are autistic unnecessarily. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question. But before we go on, Mark, I want you to get your a website out and tell our listeners out there if they have a child who's autistic or says one of the autism, the related diseases, one of these associated attention deficit disorder, or how they get in touch with you, because I know that you have clinics all across America where you're treating patients, where you're helping patients. How can people get in touch with you?
The website is www.autismtreatmentclinic.com. www.autismtreatmentclinic.com.
And that clinic is with an S on it, clinics?
Clinic, yes.
Okay, fine. Autismtreatmentclinics.com. Or certainly look up Dr. Mark Geyer, G-E-I-E-R. Dr. Mark Geyer, or his son David, and they're on the front lines of a battle to save the lives of children. Somebody had called in and wanted to know if your treatment would help any of the girls who had autism. Does it have any effect on girls at all?
That's a very interesting question to ask about girls, because we keep talking about male hormone testosterone, and we and others have done quite a bit of research on this, and what we find is that many of the girls with autism have even worse hormonal problems, meaning high testosterone, than the boys. And we think that the reason that they have worse hormonal levels is because the estrogen, meaning the female hormones, are actually protective against mercury toxicity and against the symptoms of autism. So their problems very often are even worse. They manifest in very simple terms with what I like to call little boy puberty very often, meaning issues of hair, acne. They can have problems with their menstrual cycle. It can be very regular, very painful. And as they become adults, it's been shown that they have a very high rate of what's called polycystic ovarian syndrome, which can be a very serious life-threatening illness involving cysts in the ovaries that can cause lots of havoc.
And the answer is the treatment works very, very well for the girls as well. And interestingly enough, if you go on the web, you'll see attacks on our treatment all over the place from the neurodiverse who don't want to treat autism. And from these boards, the truth of the matter is there are numerous investigators who have looked into the Lupron thing and have published papers that agree with us. And there's not one study that I know of, not one scientific study, that shows either that we're wrong or that Lupron is harmful to children. The American Academy of Pediatrics, who certainly hates us and certainly doesn't support the therapy, their position on Lupron is it's virtually without side effects in children and adolescents.
The specific term from their consensus, they actually had a consensus panel, is it's generally well-tolerated in children and adolescents.
And yet everything is being done that they can to prevent the children from getting this type of treatment. Well, let's go to Byron, who's calling us from Coeur d'Alene, over to Idaho. Hi, Byron. Do you have a question for us?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I had a couple of questions for your guest concerning autism.
Okay.
I guess my first question was, do you have any published medical papers or research papers that are available online, or maybe a book that you've written, or pamphlets?
They've got more articles than you'll ever want to read. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, and they do have, like, protocols in there for
let's
the show?
Let's let Mark answer. Go ahead, Mark.
Sure.
We publish, if anything, too much. I think 12 this year. I have 150 or so publications. We publish all over the world. You can see some of them on that website that David gave. You want to add to that, Dave?
Yes. If you go to the website, www.autismtreatmentclinic.com, you'll find that there's a tab that says research. If you click on the research tab, you'll be able to access, as you scroll down, full text of multiple different studies describing various problems in autism and how to address them from peer-reviewed studies.
We have medical textbook chapters, and we have book chapters, and we've written part of books, and we've spoken all over the world. And we are big believers, if you have something to say, you publish it in peer-reviewed articles. And I've published in Nature and Science and New England Journal, virtually every major journal in the country, and they ignore it.
Does that answer your question, Byron?
Yes, that was one question. I have a second question for him.
Okay.
And it concerns treatments for older individuals. And I know primarily it sounds like you treat children. I was just wondering about like older adults or
Are you speaking of older adults with autism or what?
Yes, I have a son who has been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, and that in particular was an area that I was curious about.
Okay, how old is your son?
He is, he's going to be, let's see, he's 39.
Okay, Mark, what would you say to Byron?
He can be treated. We don't treat everybody. Asperger's is the mild end, usually, of autism. The question always I would ask is, how well does he fit in his world? You know, if you tell me he's married and he has children and he has a job and he's doing well and, okay, once in a while he's not very social, I wouldn't suggest treating him. If you think he has, you know, is aggressive and is hurting himself or, you know, has aggressive tendencies and had high testosterone levels, they certainly respond. And incidentally, people have used Lupron long before us in adults to treat aggressive behavior. We're not the first ones to do it. We're the first ones to do it in autistic children, but it's certainly acceptable and accepted in adults. It has been for many years. It can be treated, but you have to do it with some intelligence. You know, you don't want to use a big gun treatment if someone has a minor problem. If it's a life, you know, problem to their lives, then yes, they can be treated. Our oldest patient is over 60. Most of our children are under 25, and the reason's simple. That's when they went up on the mercury in the vaccines in 1990. So most autistics in this country, the vast majority of autistics in this country are under 25, but there are some that were, you know, that are older and they can be treated.
Does that answer your question, Byron?
Yes. Well, I was just wondering, I was in the military. I spent 13 years in the military, and my sons, both of whom were born in the military. In fact, they were, my one son, the one I'm talking of, was born in Germany. And I'm just wondering about the vaccinations and things they had back then, if that could be a contributing factor to the problems he's had now. He was in the, my well, son, was in the military, but he ended up getting out on a medical discharge, and one of the things that was written up was the fact that he was given a medical discharge for the Asperger's syndrome, and I know it's deeply affected him, and trying to find somebody or somewhere to be treated.
I would suggest that you go to that website and that you get in touch with Mark, off the air, and just talk to him and see whether he has enough problems to justify it. Thank you so very much for treating him, and I realize how difficult it is for you. You love your son, but you wish he were normal, and
I see him suffering.
God bless. But get in touch with Mark. The reason we put Mark on is we're hoping people out across America who have these problems will get in touch with him. And if their children are eligible or need to be treated, then he will help it. Bye-bye. God bless. And our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're here in the Central Coast of California, have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, certainly, Mark, thou basically you've treated about 800 children. Is that right?
I think that's in the ballpark. Yes.
And what about doctors? Do you get referrals from doctors across America?
We certainly do, and in fact, we treat a lot of doctors' children.
And basically, of course, the thing is that there is this whole idea that vaccines have done wonderful things. Well, I think they have done wonderful things. But, of course, I think if you look at the cost-risk-benefit ratio, certainly this epidemic of autism has one of the most disastrous things ever happened to our children. And it's destroying the lives of so many children. And here's a treatment that will help them, and yet everything is being done to discourage you from doing it.
Can I comment on the cost? Benefit ratio.
You certainly you go right ahead.
This is something that public health likes to talk about. They like to say that they did more good than harm, and perhaps they did, and that's the standard by which they should be judged. And I would say that that's not the standard by which you judge. And I'll give you an example. In the Civil War, if somebody had an infected leg, we cut it off. Most of the people who had the infected legs would have died, but when we cut them off, most of them survived. So it has a positive risk-benefit ratio. But it's not appropriate today because we have antibiotics. You have to take your risk-benefit and compare it to today's technology. Just because their vaccines may do more good than harm, it has to be more good than harm. If you didn't have mercury, you'd do a lot more good than harm. So they've reflected us to look at the wrong standard. This isn't right compared to today's technology. And the answer is it doesn't.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly would agree with you. And the tragedy is that really there's so many children out there whose lives have been ruined because of the thimerosal in the vaccines. And when they took the thimerosal out of the childhood vaccines and immediately mandated that children be given a non-childhood vaccine, that's influenza, that contained thimerosal, that's madness. Certainly, what is the possible justification for giving children, if you acknowledge the fact that mercury may be harmful, then why would you mandate for children the influenza vaccine?
Do you know how many children die of influenza a year, according to their statistics?
How many?
Dave, you want to comment?
That in the early infant group, meaning under age 1 or 2, it's about 10 per year die. We published a paper looking at if you plot out the fact that children or infants are supposed to get 3 shots of influenza, and if it was 100% effective, we estimated that the influenza vaccine would cost $25 million per death prevented in the infant early childhood group.
And that's assuming it's 100% effective, which it probably is 0% effective, and that's assuming it had no side effects. It's insane to try to prevent 10 deaths a year with a program that requires 3 shots to each of 4.5 million children. Couldn't you think of a better way, like give out food to the poor? This is only a madman would even consider giving that to those children. It's a complete joke. And by the way, if you go into their minds, they'll tell you that they're telling you it's for your children, but they believe that they're actually protecting the old people because the old people don't make antibodies with the shots. and they think the old people catch it from the young people. Well, first of all, there's evidence that that's not true. Secondly, grandpa would never risk his young grandson to this. And third, it's totally unethical to tell people to take a shot to protect somebody else without even telling them that you're doing that.
Well, of course, you know, my concern is certainly that they're giving these influenza shots to the elderly. They're telling them you have to have it, and they really don't make antibodies, do they? Well, in other words, does the influenza vaccine really do any good to the elderly?
We've published in general about the whole U.S. influenza vaccine program, a very simple study to understand, which is that the CDC has metrics that are kept on an annual basis on number of cases of flu, number of hospitalizations, number of deaths. And in our study, we looked at the number of flu vaccines that are given each year versus the amount of deaths and hospitalizations and cases. And what we found was that there was no beneficial effect from giving more and more flu vaccines.
And by the way, they agree too. They published that in themselves. And their answer was, we said maybe you ought to consider doing something else. And their answer is, we need more shots.
Well, yeah, what they say is that even though we've given tens of millions, some years, hundreds of millions with the H1N1.
You are that calcium is important. But did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact. And the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050. JigsawMagnesium.com.
What has happened to the judiciary in these United States? From Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we've seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. The judicial system was designed to ensure that the laws of the land were just and constrained by our Constitution. Now judges have immunity and cannot be prosecuted when they act outside the law. This must stop. The judicial branch needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. At that website, you can find out what's really going on in this area of lawlessness, and more importantly, you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. JudicialReformNow.com. JudicialReformNow.com.
Most men, when they reach years of age, tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
And have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. Bye-bye. Okay, fine.
Bye-bye.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And certainly, if you have someone in your family who has autism or autism-related disorder, attention deficit disorder, you probably would want to get copies of this talk. We do have a 4-tape set on vaccines. We think it's vitally important that you get it. We also have a DVD that I did on vaccination, and there's a syllabus that goes with that, and it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. As I remember, the title to that DVD is The Specter Haunting America. The Specter Haunting America, and you want to get the syllabus for that and understand what this is about. Now, I personally believe, of course, that vaccines have been used for some terrible things. I will tell you that certainly in the original polio vaccine, there was a cancer virus, SV40. Well, it could have been there just by accident. But when they knew it was there and they knew it was a cancer virus, they continued giving the vaccine till it was all used up. And today, 30 million Americans carry simian virus 40, and the mothers pass it on to their children. And this produces cancer. 100 years ago, one person in 80 developed cancer. Today, it's 1 in 2 men, 1 in 3 women. And this is part and parcel of it. We also know, of course, that they, in other countries, they put contraceptives in the vaccine, which actually were to prevent girls from getting pregnant. And we do know that the AIDS virus was in the original hepatitis B vaccine given to homosexuals in the United States and given to blacks in certain parts of Africa, where today up to 25% of the population is infected. Of course, the homosexuals in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York who took the vaccine, of course, well, up to 70% of the homosexuals, 77% of the homosexuals in San Francisco who took the vaccine contracted AIDS and died. How do we know that there was something in the vaccine? Because one of the people who worked on this was dying of cancer. He went to Dr. Gary Glum, and Gary Glum wrote the book about how they created this virus, how they created the AIDS virus in the laboratories. The book is called Full Disclosure. Full Disclosure. Go up on the internet and try to buy a copy of it. Full Disclosure by Gary Glum. Of course, they targeted Gary Glum. The man who gave the information died of his cancer. But at least the story is out there. And, of course, this is another reason you never know what is in those vaccines you're taking. Would anybody be wicked enough to put things in vaccines that would kill people? Well, that's what cancer viruses do, ladies and gentlemen. That's what AIDS virus does. And certainly, they've contaminated our vaccines in many ways. Of course, they stop literally hundreds of millions of women from getting pregnant with the contraceptives in the vaccines. You can verify all of these. You do not know what is in the vaccine. But I will tell you that the flu vaccine, do not take it. Why? Well, first of all, it doesn't do any good. And secondly, it contains thimerosal. And of course, it's going to give you mercury toxicity that is going to impact on your mind, your fertility, get you cancer. You need to get my DVD entitled The Specter Haunting America. The Specter Haunting America, I think, is the best overview of what's going on. All of these are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, this is the last program we're going to do before we have Christmas, so we're not going to be doing programs the first of the week. So I want to take this opportunity to point out that we're involved in a spiritual battle. And, of course, if you don't have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, you're going to have a difficult time getting through the very difficult period that lies ahead. And so we hope that you'll understand that God did come to earth to give us the opportunity for salvation. And that's what Christmas is really all about. It's not about Santa Claus or Rudolph. It's about the birth of our Savior and the fact that He came here to save humanity. And if you don't have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, I suggest you start reading the Bible and going to church and learning the message of salvation. And so until, well, we'll be back on Wednesday. Until then, have a wonderful Christmas, and may the Lord be with you.
Bye, Daddy.
Bye, Daddy. Don't be late.
No.
Wide with hope, God bless America, my home.
Right, Pop? Right, son.
Oh, God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views, hopefully, of William Grigg. And William was the senior editor of the New American Magazine. He was one of the senior managers of the Republic Magazine for a time. He certainly has written extensively, has another books he's written, and now he has a blog he writes on a regular basis. Of course, you can see his writings certainly at LouRockwell.com, and Lou publishes most of William's articles. William does write the Radio Liberty monthly newsletter. It's certainly taken a lot of weight and responsibility off of my shoulders. I wrote it for about 15 years, and finally it just became so oppressive, and it was taking so much time, and I needed the time for other things. We got William to write it, and he's doing a magnificent job. And so if you get the Radio Liberty newsletter, you can go to our website. They're all posted there. We suggest you get the newsletters and read them, and of course it will help you to understand what's going on in the world. I believe William certainly does one of the finest jobs of analyzing things, and certainly one of my favorite guests. We always look forward to having him here every Friday evening, and I'm hoping our producer will be able to get William on the line here in just a moment to give us his analysis of what's going on in America today. I would simply just comment that if you do not understand that you're being brainwashed with all the information that's coming out about this tragic event that took place at Sandy Hook Elementary School there in the Newtown, Connecticut, notice how day after day, why, of course, they talk about the children who were killed. We never talk about all the children who've been killed over there in Syria. But certainly thousands of children have been killed by the civil war. We are financing the rebels, we're training the rebels, we're arming the rebels. And the people that we are financing have killed 46,000 civilians over in Syria. Thousands of them have been innocent children. But of course, nobody talks about those children. And we never see President Obama weeping for those children. Certainly, we kill 2,000 children, unborn children, every day, taking them, tearing them from their mother's womb. Some of them are actually partial birth abortions. They're ready to be born, and we simply kill them as they're coming out of the vagina. But we don't see President Obama weeping over that. Ladies and gentlemen, they're using music, they're using every psychological technique, because they want to control the guns of the American people. And I would simply point out that the solution to the problem, and it is a very real problem, the solution to the problem is to do what they do in Israel, and that is in Israel, why they give the teachers gun training, and anybody who wants to carry a gun can carry a concealed gun, and that's what we need to do in America today to protect our children. And everybody talks about, certainly, we've got to take the guns away from the people to protect the children. No, ladies and gentlemen, we need to arm the people to protect the children. William, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, it's always a privilege and a pleasure.
What are we going to talk about this evening?
I think we obviously have to enlarge on what you were saying regarding the ill-disguised and disgustingly eager campaign here to bring about civilian disarmament, and I don't think it's going to succeed. I think that gun ownership is so widely diffused and so pervasive in this country that there's not going to be a coast-to-coast disarmament of the public, but that doesn't mean the people who are pushing it will not find some way to cause a lot of trouble in pursuit of that deranged policy.
But I think people have to understand there really are people who want a dictatorship. They're not concerned about the children.
Sure.
They're the ones who want the children certainly scraped out of their mother's wombs. They're the ones, certainly, who are supporting the wars that we're in. Ladies and gentlemen, the solution is to arm the people, not to disarm them. William, you go right ahead.
The thing that I find most repellent about all this is the staggering hypocrisy of Barack Obama a week ago, standing up and wiping away non-existent tears he was prompted to by his teleprompter, as he's intoning the familiar phrases, the potted insincere phrases of condolence over the horrible deaths of the children there in Newtown. And within a couple of hours of the Sunday night interfaith service, memorial service there in that little town, where everybody was engaged in this liturgy of public grief over this horrible event, there was a drone attack in Pakistan that killed probably a dozen people. And I would be willing to bet, on the basis of past experience, that none of those people had anything to do with terrorism reasonably construed by intelligent minds, and that probably one or two children would have been among the body count, because in Pakistan, for the last several years, the Obama administration has been conducting these drone attacks in population centers, and the ratio, of suspected militants to innocent bystanders killed in these missile attacks is something along the lines of 50 to 1. And they define militants in a way that makes it impossible for anybody who is a military-aged male not to be considered a militant. That's the official definition, according to the New York Times, in an article that was published last March. All military-aged males in a targeted zone are considered potential militants. That's a really good way to create militants, is by being that indiscriminate in the use of lethal force as exercised through these airborne killing machines that are inaccessible and are piloted from readouts in Nevada and New Mexico and Virginia.
And it's just like a video game, you know.
Yes.
They set the drone over there and they just kill Pakistani civilians. And the Pakistani people are furious with us. And
well,
people throughout the world are furious with us because we're slaughtering civilians. And we say, well, that's just sort of well, one of those things, you know, people do get killed, you know, in war zones. And they might have been militants. And we're killing civilians. And where is the outcry from our religious leaders? And where is the outcry from our political leaders?
Where's the outcry from the people who were the anti-war left during the Bush administration, who, as soon as a dear leader who was more to their liking was inaugurated in 2009, suddenly lost interest in the subject of aggressive war and imperialist foreign policy? The anti-war movement, at least the left-wing branch of the anti-war movement, dissipated entirely as soon as Barack Obama was inaugurated, which meant that there was an escalation in this type of warfare overseas, which cultivates terrorism, and understandably so. If you're living in a drone strike zone in Waziristan, chances are your family has seen somebody either...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William is talking about the drone strikes in Pakistan, which have killed literally hundreds of innocent civilians over there. And he was just saying that if you are living in Pakistan at the present time in the area where there are drones are going in, why probably you know someone who has been killed by an American drone. Go right ahead.
Yeah, you know somebody who's been killed by an American drone is a member of your family or a close relation or somebody who's a neighbor. And the thing that I find most repellent about this is that the administration is conducting double tap strikes. And a double tap strike, or what was called a break when you use explosives, is a terrorist tactic, and it's calculated to demoralize the targeted population. What they'll do is they'll send in a drone, they'll target somebody who's considered on the basis of what they call a pattern of life algorithm. The pattern of life algorithm is a computer program that determines if somebody has some connection, some colorable connection, to somebody else who's considered a terrorist. And they don't have to do anything that's an overt act, just by virtue of being connected to them by a phone number or by association. This can make them part of the pool of disposable people who are targeted for drone strikes. But they'll identify somebody basically on the basis of this pattern of life standard. They'll attack the targeted area, and chances are they'll hit that individual and a number of other innocent bystanders with one drone strike, and then they will wait an interval, usually 50 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour or so, while the first responders rush to the scene in order to minister to the dying and try to identify the deceased. And then they will strike again. They'll send in a second drone strike to take out the first responders. This is a terrorist tactic. It's been something that's been employed by groups like Hamas. Hamas, of course, is in large measure a creation of both the CIA and Israeli intelligence. It was supposed to be a foil to Fatah, and has taken on a malignant life of its own.
Let me just repeat William said that Hamas was created by the CIA and Israel by the Mossad. The CIA and Mossad created Hamas as they wanted an opposition to the Palestinian Liberation Organization. So we created this enemy that now, of course, is threatening Israel and threatening the United States. Go right ahead. We create the best enemies money could buy. Until you understand that, you cannot understand anything going on. Go ahead.
Yes, it's a case of creating the poison and the antidote in the same laboratory, which is one of my favorite expressions from the infinitely quotable and unfathomably wise Frederick Bastiat. But double tap strikes are part of the playbook of every terrorist group, including Hamas. Now they're the official policy of the bomb administration when carrying out these drone attacks overseas. This has the predictable effect, of course, of demoralizing everybody within a given neighborhood or a given community, and furthermore, this has the effect of making people live in a state of perpetual insecurity. And if you want to know what it's like literally to live in a zone where lethal violence can descend upon you without warning, take a look at the inhabitants of Waziristan and Pakistan. Now, over the last week or so, people in this country, on the basis of this horrible but completely anomalous incident in Newtown, Connecticut, have been thinking about how horrible it is to send your kids to school with the expectation that something bad might happen to them. And the odds of this happening are roughly akin to the odds of being struck twice by lightning. It's a horrible thing when it happens, but it happens on vanishingly rare occasions. The number of attacks of this sort has been declining consistently for the last 10 years, and mass murders of this kind have been declining since 1929. When they happen, they're well publicized. Of course they should be publicized, because there's nothing worse than the death of a child. But we don't live in a situation in this country where the odds are that if we send our kids to school or to church or to the market, that something bad is going to happen to them. That's not true of the inhabitants of Waziristan. There is a Sandy Hook-style massacre that occurs in Pakistan and Afghanistan every single day. And it is our government, that is to say the people who presume to rule us, who are conducting these acts of state terror. And no doubt the people who are on the receiving end of this imperial violence look upon America corporately and Americans individually the same way that we look on Adam Lanza. We can't understand why somebody would be possessed of this irrational, murderous impulse that would manifest itself by attacking kindergartners. That's something that simply doesn't make sense to us. But we don't understand that the government that presumes to rule us is behaving exactly that same way. And it's doing so with the enthusiastic bipartisan support of people on both sides of the aisle. I mean, the day before the Sandy Hook massacre, the House, if I remember correctly, Judiciary Committee, was examining a measure proposed by Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich that would have required the Obama administration to provide documents on the drone program, specifically the documents discussing the legal ramifications of it, and to provide a legal defense for this program. It was a resolution that was intended to compel the president to do this. It was the House Republicans, because they still have a majority in the House of Representatives. It was the House Republicans in this committee that wouldn't allow that measure to reach the full floor. It was voted down by an unrecorded voice vote. But it was the Republicans who took the initiative to defeat this measure that would put some kind of restriction, conceptually at least, on the drone program, knowing that the drone program would continue on its merry way and there would be innocent people dying as a result of it. That happened the day before the attack at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut.
But you know what really bothers me, William, is that we never hear any of our ministers or Christian leaders speaking out about this drone attack or about torture. We don't hear suddenly our political leaders speaking out on the drone attacks or on the use of torture, the standard use of torture to extract the confessions and kidnapping people and flying them throughout the world and sometimes having them tortured to death. If you ever read the story of what happened at Abu Ghraib, there were at least three people who were tortured to death. And most people have never read Major General Taguba's report. Major General Taguba was the highest-ranking Philippine officer in the military. He was asked if he would investigate what happened at Abu Ghraib prison. He was also told that if he told the truth, it would end his military career. Major General Tsuguba investigated. He saw the horror of what had happened. He told the truth. And, of course, he was called and told to submit his resignation. You see, if you're a military officer, you're not supposed to tell the truth. At one time, we had honorable people in the military, but when Major General Tsuguba was told to resign his commission because he told the truth, I think it tells you exactly what's going on at the upper echelons of our military and the tragedy that's befallen a once proud and honorable profession. Incidentally, you can get that report off the internet, or we actually have it. We have to charge for it. But I suggest you get it and you read it and you weep. They tortured people to death, and nothing was ever done to the Americans who did that. Go right ahead.
And the thing about that instance is that the general who was investigating the torture at Abu Ghraib was not only telling the truth, but he was upholding the Uniform Code of Military Justice. His oath to the Constitution required that he do so. And under the UCMJ, torture is a serious offense. It can be a capital offense under the UCMJ. So he was not only examining abuses that were being committed at Abu Ghraib and elsewhere in occupied Iraq, but he was doing so from the perspective of somebody who was required to do this by law, but the rule of law had been replaced by this time with the rule of expediency and loyalty to constituted authority, which, of course, is something that we examined in the Nuremberg tribunals. You are not morally bound to obey a manifestly illegal or unlawful order. As a matter of fact, you are morally and legally required not to obey an order that is an obvious patent violation of the Constitution and of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Something similar happened at Gitmo at Guantanamo Bay. I can't remember the name of the Judge Advocate General officer. I believe he was a major who was chief prosecutor at Guantanamo Bay, but he was forced to resign because he would not use evidence extracted through torture in the military tribunals at Guantanamo Bay. And those tribunals are problematic to begin with because it's not clear that, as a matter of fact, it's very clear, I should say, it's very clear that it is not permissible to take a civilian, whether you're talking about a common civilian, the common citizen of a foreign country, or whether you're talking about a foreign national who's been accused of being part of an irregularly constituted guerrilla force, and subject them to a military tribunal, let alone, of course, a U.S. citizen. And what's happened in the case of Guantanamo is that, with the exception of a few people who've been accused of involvement in the 9/11 attacks, which is a criminal offense, not an act of war, it should fall under the jurisdiction of the Article III court. Actually, you can make a case it shouldn't be a federal offense at all, but they should be prosecuted in district court in New York, in Manhattan, where the crime actually took place, rather than being prosecuted by the federal government, let alone the military. But there's a population of a couple of hundred people still at Guantanamo who were there because a group of bounty hunters in Pakistan and Afghanistan scooped them up and sold them to the CIA, and many of these people are dying through suicide or through induced suicide through the use of psychotropic drugs, and some of them have been tortured to death. There are three so-called suicides a few years ago where it's pretty clear that they weren't actual suicides. They didn't hang themselves using bed sheets because they had rags stuffed down their throats as they were hanging themselves, which, of course, is redundant. It doesn't strike me at all as reasonable that somebody would swallow a rag and then hang himself. That doesn't make sense in terms of a modality of suicide. It reminds me of the so-called suicide of Gary Webb, the heroic reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, who wrote the piece about the CIA's involvement in drug trafficking. He somehow managed to shoot himself in the head twice. But the same kind of things happen in Guantanamo, and it's become very routine, not only in Guantanamo, but elsewhere in the prison system, to use torture.
But of course, when Gary Webb was evaluated by the medical examiner, he said it was obvious a suicide. He wanted to commit suicide. He shot himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. Ladies and gentlemen, this is real. I interviewed Gary Webb on a number of occasions before his untimely death. But then I've interviewed a number of people who have died under very mysterious circumstances. And sometimes I wonder why I'm still here and why William's still here. But I think the Lord's looking after William, and hopefully the Lord's looking after us. But so many of the people we have interviewed through the years have died violent deaths, sometimes shortly afterwards, or simply disappeared. William, go right ahead.
It really is an ominous thing and a heartbreaking thing that we'll be talking about the United States of America as a country in which people can be disappeared or people can be suicided. And those are odd locutions. The phrase to be disappeared, of course, comes out of the dirty war in Argentina. And to be suicided, that phrase, is one that we hear with respect to the KGB and its satellite intelligence organizations during the Cold War. But we're living in a country now that meets that description. We're living in a country now where the government routinely commits what reasonable people would have to call war crimes through the use of indiscriminate aerial bombardment by way of these remote-controlled drones, Hellfire missiles, that are operated by people in climate-controlled offices thousands of miles away who spend 8 or 10 hour shifts remotely piloting these vehicles and then drive home to their wives and children while somewhere on the other side of the world, another family is picking through the rubble looking for survivors. And you pointed out, Dr. Stan, that the way that these drones are operated is very reminiscent of video games. And that's a subject that, of course, has been implicated in the conversation of the last week as we've been talking about the case of Adam Lanza, who, like every other shooter who's been involved in every other instance of this kind, was on a whole cocktail of mind-destroying psychoactive drugs and has been immersed in the video game culture. That's true of, I think, every adolescent who's been involved in a mass shooting of this sort. And these first-person shooter games, of course, are meant to cultivate the reflexes and to reconfigure the neural pathways in people to participate in these games in ways that turn them into killing machines. And in these immersive environments that are sometimes involved in these first-person shooter games, there's this sense of a sort of enhanced reality where the mind grows accustomed to the idea of shooting the figures of unrecognizable strangers as a matter of reflex. And that's one of the reasons why first-person shooter games are very similar to some of the training apparatus that are used by the military in order to train snipers, train special forces operators. And now we have a whole cohort of people, probably tens of thousands strong, who are conducting drone warfare, and they're doing so in an environment where they're completely isolated from the battlefield. And they're watching in real time as their missiles are being fired at targets they don't know, people they've never met, and people obviously have no way of harming us or retaliating directly for what's being done. There was a heartbreaking story in Der Spiegel that was picked up by, I think, the London Telegraph that profiled a young man, I think he's in his 30s now, an Air Force veteran who was stationed at a drone facility in, if memory serves, New Mexico, who on one occasion carried out an approved strike using a Hellfire missile against a target in Afghanistan. The target was a shed. And inside that shed could be seen through the infrared imaging system of the drone the silhouette, the profile of a small child. A small child entered the shed just before the missile hit and destroyed the shed. And the drone operator asked, did we just kill a kid? And he was told it didn't matter because it didn't give an authorization to carry out the strike. And this almost destroyed this young man because he still had the residual decency that had been imparted to him by his creator, in which people understand that you simply do not kill children. But this has become standard operating procedure once again for the military under this regime, under the leadership of Flag and Star Officer Corps.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we was just talking about an incident that occurred when, of course, one of our military operators was piloting a drone, and he was told to hit this shed, and of course they could see with their infrared that a child had just entered the shed just before the missile struck, and it went up in a sheet of flame, and the young man was upset. He said, did we just kill a kid? And his superior said, well, it's all right, we had authorization. But this bothered this young man. I mean, we have sort of a sense of morality. You shouldn't go around killing kids. And he had just, of course, killed a child. I killed a child using the video game, but except the trouble was there was a real live drone at the other end with real live explosives, and they killed a child. What's the rest of the story there?
Well, the rest of the story is that this young man had to take a medical leave in order to deal with what is called post-traumatic stress syndrome. I don't know what to think about that diagnosis. I do know that there are obvious implications for the psyche, and psyche is, I believe, derived from the Greek and refers to the soul. Your soul is wounded when you do something of this sort, and at some point, if you keep doing it, you'll become inured to it, and that's a horrible situation to be in. But at some level, inaccessible to medicine, inaccessible to the tools of secular science, at some level, you're going to be rebelling against it, and I believe that explains why we have so many veterans who come back from these protracted conflicts where they're put into a 360-degree battlefield full of people who have done no harm to us but would kill the soldiers if they had the opportunity to do so because they don't like being occupied by a foreign power any more than we would. They come back from that experience, and they're permanently wounded with injuries that are not visible but that have lasting consequences. For heaven's sake, at least 303 soldiers, 303 members of the military, soldiers, airmen, marines, etc., have killed themselves this year. In Afghanistan, I believe that the total number of combat deaths is about 212. So there have been more American military personnel who've taken their own lives this year than have been killed in combat in the active battle zone in Afghanistan.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, William, since we have a book, it talks about this Iraqi who was recruited by the CIA in the late 1950s. He was part of an assassination team, and they were supposed to kill some political leader, he and a couple of other people. But when he got there with a gun pointed out, he just couldn't do it. He couldn't actually kill this individual, and he became violently ill, and he had to be taken out by the CIA and conditioned and programmed. And eventually, of course, he was sent to Iraq to be involved in politics, and his name was Saddam Hussein. Years later, he thought nothing at all of ordering the murder of thousands of people, but he'd been well-trained. He started out as a normal human being, and we trained him to become a killer, and he was a very efficient one. We put him in power in 1979. We supported him all during the 1980s, while they killed probably 500,000, 750,000 Iranians, some of them with a poison gas. A lot of them were just kids, 14, 15-year-olds, being used to clear the minefields there. And then he killed a number of people in Kurdistan. We don't know how many. Some people say 100,000, but there was one community where he ordered the death of between 3,000 and 5,000 people because these people supposedly were not certainly sympathetic with the Iraqi regime. But this was Saddam Hussein, who was trained by our government. But he started out just as a normal human being who was suddenly shocked and horrified at the thought of killing another human being. But we managed to train him well, didn't we?
That's the thing that happens with everybody who is inserted into the militarist apparatus of any background, because we all have exactly the same moral operating system. And that operating system has to be overcome, but it can't be fully erased. It can be submerged, deeply submerged, but at some point it will assert itself. And I don't think that anybody of woman born, no matter how depraved he becomes, is beyond the reach of conscience. The conscience is there somewhere. I'm reading a fascinating book right now called In the Shadow of His Wings, which is the memoir of a German Catholic priest who was drafted into the Wehrmacht in the 1930s. After being part of a Christian youth group that was the antithesis of the Hitler Youth, he was drafted into the military, ended up in the SS, and it's the account of how somebody in that position was struggling to retain his conscience in the midst of this all-encompassing propaganda and indoctrination. And the thing is, the people he met were not innately depraved until the depravity was churned to the surface and fortified by the programming that they'd undergone. And I'm convinced that we have, unfortunately, the same kind of thing happening here in the United States today in many elements of the Homeland Security and Imperial Military apparatus. It's something that's going to have dire consequences for what remains of our freedom.
Amen to that. And of course, basically, once you turn the people against God, you take God out of every aspect of society and out of the military. while you're creating a monster, a true monster.
While a storm cloud gathers far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free.
In fact, I think it's so interesting. Apparently, there's a new ruling out that a military leader can no longer lead his troops in prayer. This is not allowed, nor is a military chaplain allowed to pray in the name of Jesus Christ. He can pray to God, but not to Jesus Christ. But a military leader cannot lead his troops in prayer, as Patton had once done. And many of our great leaders, certainly MacArthur and others, have done down through these said centuries. But we have a new army, and it's certainly based upon atheism, certainly not upon God and God's guidance. Go right ahead.
It's based on the worship of the state, and that's, of course, the oldest religion. I mean, if you're talking about things pertaining to the Creator and His law, you're talking about something that I believe transcends religion as we understand the term. The oldest religion is collectivism. The oldest religion is the worship of collective human power as manifest in a government of some sort and embodied in some kind of a ruler. And that's the Babylonian model. We talked about that before, Dr. Stan. It's, of course, a matter of persistent relevance to our situation. But the military that we have right now is the new model army, an expression used by Cromwell, who was a man of many parts, not all of them commendable. But the new model army we have right now is supposed to be an instrument of social engineering. It's not supposed to be constituted for the defense of the United States and the liberties protected by our Constitution. It's supposed to be the enforcement arm of this element of the government that is controlled by that cohort you refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness. And it's been deracinated, that is to say, it's been shorn of its roots in our culture and in our heritage of the Anglo-Saxon tradition of liberty. And, of course, it's been abstracted from any understanding of the vocation that should characterize people who are entrusted with the role of protecting the liberties and the rights and property of others. And that's all rooted in our Christian heritage. And right now, of course, we have an army that, as you say, Dr. Stan, is an appendage of this pagan culture that we're living in, the pagan state that rules us. And that's a point that's made in this memoir of this individual named Goldman, who was a priest who ended up in the SS. He said that it was made very clear to him very early on that the role of the SS, the role of the Nazi, the National Socialist Government, was essentially to destroy Christianity. During the war, of course, they'd make operational or tactical use of Christian themes, and they would tolerate Christianity until the victory, and then after they had consolidated power, then they were going to destroy Christian culture because it impeded the worship of the state. And that's a particularly pristine version of what we're talking about here.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply pointing out the fact that we are living in a post-Christian America. At one time, everybody knew America was a Christian nation. Our concepts were based upon Christianity. Yes, there were people who lived here who were not Christians, but the vast majority of our people were Christians, just as the vast majority of the people who live in the Middle East are Muslims. The vast majority that we consider it a Muslim nation of people who live in India are Hindu. We call it a Hindu nation. The vast majority of the people in the United States were Christians. We called it a Christian nation. But we're told we can't do that, because, and of course, we really shouldn't, because we're no longer a Christian nation. Go right ahead, William.
One of the things about the description, or the discussion, rather, of what happened at Newtown, Connecticut, that we're finding is another facet of this pagan, idolatrous worship of the collective at the expense of the individual that we're discussing here, Dr. Stan, and that is the idea that somehow firearms in the hands of government agents are sanctified because they're a caste set apart from the rest of us. And in all the discussion of what to do about the guns, the implicit assumption here is that we're only talking about guns being problematic if they're in the hands of somebody other than agents of state power and agents of state enforcement. And there's a wonderful example of that just yesterday, when Senator Barbara Boxer of California, who is one of the most incurably foolish people in public life, made a proposal, two proposals actually, two pieces of legislation that she has sponsored one of which would use the Community-Oriented Policing Service, COPS program, which is the federalized police, the element of the Clinton omnibus crime bill of about almost 20 years ago, I think it was 1993, 1994 that was enacted, that federalizes law enforcement. She wants to use COPS grants, the money that would be granted to municipalities through the COPS program, to expand surveillance and security protocols in government schools. And the other proposal she made was to repurpose the federalized National Guard in various states to provide security at schools. That is to say, they would deploy armed troops, presumably in full battle array, in order to provide security at government schools in order to protect people living in what are called gun-free zones. Now, she's a leftist and a collectivist, which means that, among other things, she suffers from a severe irony deficiency. So she probably wasn't aware of the fact that you can't have a gun-free zone if you have an armed soldier or an armed policeman inhabiting the zone. There are guns. But she has the selective blindness of collectivists regarding firearms in the hands of that element of society most inclined to do lethal violence. And that, of course, would be people who represent the government. Every significant bloodletting in history, I mean, we're talking here of bloodletting that creates body counts with multiple zeros behind them, has been carried out by governments, either directly through the military and police apparatus of a given government, or in a system in which the military and police are working in conjunction with nominally private death squads, as was the case in Rwanda. Yes, most of the killing in Rwanda was carried out by Hutu power militias or gangs who used machetes rather than guns. But behind those gangs were grim-faced men with machine guns who were working for the Hutu-dominated government of Rwanda, and they were targeting a population that had been disarmed by the United Nations. They had a so-called peace accord go into place in 1993 that called for the systematic disarmament of anybody who was not a government official. And that was profoundly dangerous for the Tutsi ethnic cohort in Rwanda, because since the Belgian colonial era under King Leopold back in the 19th century, the Tutsis and the Hutus in Rwanda had been at daggers drawn with each other. The Belgians, for whatever reason, decided that the Tutsis were the superior of those two ethnic groups because they looked more European. They were tall and willowy, and they had finer features, very attractive. Their skin was perhaps a shade or two lighter in terms of the complexion of the Tutsis when compared to the Hutus. The Hutus were smaller, their features were thicker and heavier and more classically African, and they were looked upon as being backward and perhaps a little bit slow. And of course, there was no difference in measurable intelligence between these two arbitrarily defined ethnic groups. They were from the same country. They had the same culture and background. They spoke the same language. But because they had been put into these two collective groups, and the Tutsis had been given favorable treatment by the imperial power, there was this rancor that developed between them. And over the course of the better part of a century or longer, you had this merry-go-round of violence where one group would come to power and persecute the other. You had the Tutsis massacring the Hutus back in the early 1960s, and when the Hutus came to power in the 1990s, they decided to return the favor. The biggest difference was this time they had the United Nations to back them up by confiscating the firearms of everybody who was not part of that government. So by April of 1994, when the president of Rwanda died in a very suspicious plane crash, that was a triggering event, a precipitating event, for the planned massacre of the Tutsis and Hutus who were seen as insufficiently faithful to the government. That had been planned no later than late 1993. The UN commander on scene, a Canadian lieutenant by the name of Romeo Dallaire, whom I have interviewed about this subject, had become aware of the fact that the massacres were being planned and arms caches were being assembled throughout the country. The government was organizing this massacre, planning it, looking for a precipitating event. He had warned the head of the UN's peacekeeping auxiliary about it, and in January of 1994, he received a fax from the head of the peacekeeping division telling him that he did not have permission to disarm the government. but that he was to continue disarming the population, and he was supposed to share with the government the intelligence that he had received about the impending massacre. That would have been redundant because the government was planning the massacre. They were aware of what was coming, but he was told that he was to stand down when it came to taking action to disarm the government-organized death squad. And that directive came from Kofi Annan, who went on to become Secretary General of the United Nations to receive a Nobel Peace Prize a few years later. And the thing is, there was an official report that was published in 1998, post-mortem of what happened in Rwanda in 1994, that validated in every particular what people like you and me had said about that incident, Dr. Stan, that this is something that the UN could have prevented, if only by publicizing the plans that the government had to conduct this massacre. And it was a genocide. It was an attempt to wipe out the entire Tutsi population. And they did a respectable job of carrying out that grisly and demonic task. In the course of about 100 days, between 800,000 and 1.1 million people were murdered, most of them hacked to death with machetes in an industrial-grade killing enterprise that rivaled the Khmer Rouge in terms of murderous efficiency. This was done after the United Nations had helped to disarm the targeted population through gun turn-ins and gun buybacks. But the thing is, this happened because the government and the people who were attached to the government were given a monopoly on the use of armed force, in this case, to commit aggression. In our system, of course, it's understood that the government does not have a monopoly on the legitimate use of force. The government has a derivative and limited role in helping us to defend ourselves in the constitutional scheme. But the conversation over the last week has started with the premise that we have only that limited and revocable privilege to own certain types of firearms for the purpose of hunting or other pursuits that have nothing to do with the protection of our persons and property against criminal aggression. Certainly there's no role for armed citizens in holding in abeyance the ambitions of the government that rules us. So we hear people like Andrew Cuomo, who is the governor of the state of New York, saying in a radio program today, and I'm quoting now, "I don't think legitimate sportsmen are going to say I need an assault weapon to go hunting." That's actually from an interview with the New York Times. "There is a balance here. I understand the rights of gun owners. I understand the rights of hunters." Notice how he's commingling those two things as if they were the same. And then how do you deal with what's going on now? He says confiscation could be an option. Mandatory sale to the state could be an option. Permitting could be an option. Keep your gun, but permit it. That's what Andrew Cuomo was saying to the New York Times today. They're talking about confiscation. They're talking about so-called gun buybacks. And, of course, a gun buyback is a huge subsidy for the criminal class. What happens is that the police will announce a gun turn-in, a gun buyback. There'll be some consideration, such as maybe $25 or a gift certificate or shoes or something else that people would prize. And so petty criminals will go out and steal guns and turn them in. No questions asked. They'll get whatever is being offered as a reward. That sort of thing happens all the time in Chicago, which has some of the toughest gun laws in the country and probably the highest rate of firearms-related crime as a result. But every time there's a discussion of a turn-in or a buyback or a program of this sort, there's a population being targeted for disarmament, and no good comes of it. One of my friends was a special forces operator who was involved in the UN-mandated invasion and occupation of Haiti in 1994. I think it was 1993, actually, that happened. Late 1993, early 1994, when Aristide was momentarily, 5 or 6 months or so, he was ousted by a junta led by Raul Cedras and a number of people in the Haitian military. And Aristide is an intoxicated, deranged Marxist psychopath. So, of course, the United Nations wanted to reinstall him as the democratic ruler of Haiti. And this was done pursuant to a UN Security Council resolution. He had U.S. troops go ashore in Haiti for the purpose of reenthroning this butcher, this madman. Well, there was a group within the special forces who were given registration lists, detailed registration lists of firearms and other weaponry that were owned by civilians in various neighborhoods there in Port-au-Prince. And they would go door-to-door with these computer printouts listing all the weapons and all the addresses where those weapons were to be found. And the idea was that they were supposed to go and confiscate the guns. And many U.S. military personnel did as they were told. Well, this friend of mine, who was a master sergeant in the Green Berets, decided that he would freelance a little bit. So when he was given the list, he would knock on a door and he'd say, excuse me, is this the domicile of such and such? Being told that it was, he'd say, okay, are the following firearms to be found on the premises? And if the owner confirmed that those firearms were to be found there, he'd say, okay, very well, I'm just checking, have a nice day. In other words, he didn't carry out his orders. He wasn't going to disarm the civilian population and leave them defenseless in the teeth of this regime. And on a couple of occasions, when he came across somebody he considered to be a particularly estimable specimen, somebody who was a property owner and had some concept of individual liberty, the conversation would take the form roughly as follows. Are these firearms in your domicile? And then he would say, if he received an affirmative answer, well, would you like something better? And so he did engage in some limited gun turn-ins, but he'd usually up-armor people he considered to be exemplary citizens by giving them superior firearms, because he was not going to leave these people defenseless. So he was, to that extent, and in that sense, what we now call an oath keeper. He was not going to disarm the population of a foreign country in order to work the will of the United Nations by re-enthroning this Marxist psychopath, leaving the people defenseless. Unfortunately, that once again was in 1994, and there has been a change in the tenor and the complexion of our military, the ideological complexion of our military and law enforcement, in ways that are very ominous. So when somebody like Andrew Cuomo comes along and says we're going to have confiscation, that could be an option, or gun buybacks or permitting, if they're talking about having permits regarding the type of guns that we have, implicit in a permit, of course, is the revocation of permission. And at some point, they would probably send personnel door-to-door, the way that we had American soldiers doing this in Haiti, and to a certain extent, the way that U.S. soldiers under U.N. command were doing this in Somalia in 1993, chances are there are going to be, at least in some parts of this country, an effort to go door-to-door and confiscate firearms. I can see that happening. This incessant monomaniacal drumbeat that we're hearing and seeing in the media right now is unmistakably an effort to tune the atmosphere for that type of severe restriction or outright confiscation. And you have Joe Biden, and if there's any person in public life more foolish than Barbara Boxer, it'd be Joe Biden, who's been appointed now to head a commission that's supposed to deliver recommendations sometime early next month.
And we know what they've recommended is going to be done. It's going to be to get the guns away from the people to protect the children. And we want to protect the children, so we've got to take the guns away so we won't be able to kill them. Ladies and gentlemen, in Norway recently, why, of course, Norway has extremely strict gun registration and gun limitation. Nobody in Norway has a gun. And so some fellow who had some sort of a chip on his shoulder went out to an island there. He slaughtered 65 human beings with an automatic weapon, and no way to stop him because nobody had a gun. Police finally arrived. The fellow was there. He said, I did it. I'm done. I'm getting back at society. But once you disarm the people, there's no way to stop a psychopath.
Yeah. He just said, I'm done. I'm finished killing. And that's what happens in every case of this kind, is that the killer will stop on his own terms. But that means that, like Anders Breivik there in Norway, he simply turns over the machine gun to the police and says, I'm done, take me into custody. Or like what happened with Adam Lanzi, he swallows the gun barrel. The point is that the engagement ends on the terms of the shooter. It's almost never the case that the police are going to stop an active shooter before he's finished killing. And so it makes no sense at all to leave people disarmed in the face of danger, however you calibrate the threat in terms of its plausibility.
Before we go on, I do want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can certainly get to the articles you've written, and then, of course, how they can find your PayPal button. Please tell them.
I really appreciate
it. Coming to the edge of the program. Go ahead.
My blog is called Pro Libertate. Just go to Google and type in Pro Libertate, LIBERTATE, or type in William N. Grigg, and chances are Pro Libertate is going to be the first return. The direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com. The essay that is up at Pro Libertate right now is about Barbara Boxer's lunatic proposal of deploying the National Guard to provide security at government schools. That's also been republished at lewrockwell.com this evening, lewrockwell.com. And on my Pro Libertate page, once again, that's freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or just find a search engine and type in Pro Libertate and Grigg. the bottom of every essay, there's a PayPal button for those who have the means, the inclination to contribute. And our family is pretty much dependent on donations for our income. And we really do appreciate everything that you've done for us, Dr. Stan, and everything that so many generous members of your audience have done in order to keep our family at least somewhat liquid in these very parlous financial and economic times. But Pro Libertate, the blog, is my chief outlet. I also have a YouTube channel. It's called the Freedom Zealot channel. And for those who are on Facebook, I'm on Facebook, William N. Grigg. And then I also have a Twitter account. You can follow me on Twitter at Blarney Con Carney. At Blarney Con Carney. Blarney Con Carney is a nickname I was saddled with in college. I'm Irish and Mexican. Somebody decided that Blarney Con Carney was a good way of encapsulating my ethnic heritage. So I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on YouTube, there's the blog, and I'm also on LouRockwell.com.
And certainly my wife and I support William. Certainly he's got six children and a family to support. And if you're in a position to help him, why, I certainly would appreciate it. He does a great job. He's certainly one of the most articulate people we have. We always love to have him as a guest here on our radio programs. We'll be right back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing and a pleasure to be with you, and I really do appreciate what you've done for our family and what you've been doing many years for the cause of freedom and the truth. I'm, of course, at this time of year, prone to reflect on the singular blessing that we celebrate at this time of year, whether, of course, it's the appropriate time of year to recognize the advent, the mortal arrival of our Lord and Savior. Whether this is the right time of year in that sense of being appropriate from a calendar perspective, I don't know, but I do know that it's an appropriate thing to recognize that human history was really cleaved in two by the mortal advent of the Savior, by the Incarnation, and by the ministry, the teaching ministry, and of course the redemptive ministry that he carried out, and how he taught what the Epistle of James calls the perfect law of liberty, and that law of liberty is the golden rule, and how it's impossible to have a society worthy of the name, a civilization worthy of the name that is not rooted in that law, and of course in the two great commandments that we love and serve our Creator. We acknowledge his existence, we acknowledge his sovereignty, and that we take that acknowledgement takes the form of loving our neighbor like ourselves. And everything that we do that detracts from our fidelity to those principles leads us in the direction that we're going. And one of the reasons why we're so deeply mired and descending ever further into the abysm of collectivist irrationality and all the horrible things that ensue is because we're ignoring those big and ineluctable laws of reality. I mean, these are not optional. These are not suggestions. We have to live that way if we're going to live lives worthy of being fully human. And so I'm given to sober reflection now about how far we've traveled in a direction that leads us away from that ideal, and how what we're dealing with right now is the tangible consequences of our apostasy from those principles. So with every impulse of my soul, I desperately and earnestly plead that we do what we can in order to bring about genuine repentance, to reverse our direction and to repudiate what we have done individually and as a country by way of ignoring those sober and indispensable laws of life, and that we re-embrace the truth that was taught to us by he whose birth we celebrate in a couple of days.
So true, and basically, of course, without certainly turning back to God, there is no hope for our society because our freedoms came from God, and that was the reason our Constitution was actually created, was to actually to record the concepts put forward that we were the product of our Creator. For we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which were life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that governments were instituted among men with the consent of the governed to actually produce these rights. That's what the Declaration of Independence says. The whole idea our government was based upon this concept of giving us our freedoms that come from God, different than any other nation in the world, where the ruler, the emperor, the king, the dictator gives people certain rights. In America, our rights came from God, and certainly governments were created to secure our God-given rights. William, God bless you. Have a wonderful Christmas time. We look forward to talking to you real soon.
God bless you, Dr. Stan. Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to know how we're poisoning our children and destroying their lives, and why one in about every 64 males in America today has autism, and they, certainly when you get down to the other forms of attention deficit disorder and attention disorder, why, of course, you're talking probably 1 in 10 or 15 children, why this is happening, you need to hear my talk, The Spectre Haunting America. It's a DVD, comes with the syllabus. Very important, The Spectre Haunting America. If you want to know how they're poisoning us and poisoning our drinking water, you need to get my talk on the hidden agenda and the syllabus that goes with that. If you want to get my interview with Norman Dodd, who is director of research for the only congressional committee ever permitted to investigate the great tax-exempt foundations, the Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie foundations. It's a DVD called The Desperate Deception. Once again, certainly, The Specter Haunting America on Vaccines, Hidden Agenda on Fluoride, Desperate Deception, The Story of a Great Tax-Exempt Foundations, and, of course, what did the Congressional Committee find? Why the Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie Foundations were financing communism and Marxism. Why would they do that? So we would have an enemy to rally the people behind the government. And also, of course, we would want to centralize all power with our own government, make it all-powerful to protect us from those wicked communists who are being financed by the great tax-exempt foundations. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and we hope that you'll go there and that you'll actually order that, and if you'd like a catalog, the other items we have, and we have all sorts of items. We actually are offering spices now, and we think they're wonderful. We use them. We've used them for 20 years. It's simply another vehicle that we can offer to people, and it helps to finance what we're doing. If you're a man and you're over 60 years old and you have to get up at nighttime, you should be taking prostate support. I do it, and certainly we provide this for our male listeners. It'll change your life, I promise you. And, of course, we have Berkey water filters. We carry the Miracle-Dew soap products. We have all sorts of herbal products, the things that you should be taking if you'd like a list of them. Most of them we take ourselves. And certainly, now, if you look at my wife, you'd never know how old she really was. In fact, she really looks amazingly good. Using these various herbs and spices and using the various products that we offer on our health catalog. Well, this is the time when I want to mention we will not be back with you again before Christmas. We're taking off Monday. And certainly remember, this is the season where we honor the Lord who came to earth to offer salvation. If America was following on Christian principles, we wouldn't be in the problem we are today. But a small little group of people has taken over our country and they hate Christianity. That's why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. That's why in the countries we go into, we destroy Christianity. Learn about what's going on. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America, for our provision and protection. And we wish you and your family a very merry and wonderful Christmas season. And remember, Jesus Christ is the reason for the season.
Beside her and guide. Gentlemen, to the Power Hour radio show. It is straight up top of the hour, 7 a.m. Central Time. You know what that means? We got some good news and some bad news for you. The good news is we didn't all die at 5:11 a.m. this morning. And the bad news is, no, we didn't.
Okay.
And the bad news is we did fall off the cliff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, will we die after we hit the bottom or...
Nobody really knows because that's, like, going to be debated, how far we fell off the cliff and if we are hanging on by our fingernails. You all know the drill on this one. It just gets to be more stupider and stupider. The things going on around the world presently with Hillary and her Benghazi illness, her allergy to Benghazi, yeah. People are now saying that she was lying about that.